You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland and online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from KBOO members and Grendel's Coffee Shop, located at East Burnside and 8th Avenue in Portland, featuring coffee, tea, sandwiches, and more. Information at grendelspdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, groups in Central Oregon pull back on cultural event plans because of harassment fears. Musical artists are canceling tour dates in the U.S. over visa troubles. And in national news, Trump takes aim at funding for public and community media. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025. I'm Eric Leuschner. Portland's Cinco de Mayo event will go on as planned amid safety concerns at other events. At least two events in Central Oregon have joined a growing list of canceled outings nationwide. Cultural groups in Central Oregon are pulling back from organizing large public events due to concerns of attendants being detained or deported by the Trump administration. Press releases for Latino Fest in Madras and Juneteenth in Bend cited concerns over safety for participants. Focus on cultural events comes as the Trump administration pursues aggressive deportation strategies nationwide, including the abrupt termination of visas for some college students. Anna Bueno is the event committee lead in Madras. Bueno said, quote, "In previous years, people have protested the event while waving Trump flags, and nothing major happened. But this year feels different." Central Oregon has been dealing with high-profile racist incidents in recent years, from racial slurs being screamed repeatedly during a Bend public meeting to rocks being thrown at a mariachi band in Redmond. Large events in Portland are moving forward. These include the Cinco de Mayo Fiesta happening at the Tom McCall Waterfront Park May 2nd through the 5th and El Grito happening at the Moda Center September 15th and 16th. Musical artists from around the globe are changing their minds about visiting and touring in the U.S. because of threats from the Trump administration. KBOO's Lexis Ponce has more on the story.
Visa troubles are causing artists to cancel shows in Oregon and around the U.S. A growing number of international artists are rethinking and even canceling their U.S. tours or showcases, citing political volatility, visa uncertainty, and concerns over border treatment. Artists like Shred Kelly, a Canadian band, canceled their U.S. shows, including a stop in Portland. British singer FKA Twigs announced early this month that they would not be making an appearance at Coachella and even canceled their American tour. Both artists cited ongoing visa issues as a reason for not performing in the States. Even with a visa in hand, U.S. Customs and Border Protection have the final say and can deny entry on the spot, regardless of prior approvals. More than a few artists have watched tours crumble from an airport terminal. Recently, Mexican band Los Alegres del Barranco had their visas revoked after they performed a song praising a cartel kingpin. Instances like this have only intensified concerns about how artistic expression can collide with the U.S. policy. Coming to America has turned into a gamble for everyone and for many artists. It's not worth the risk. For KBOO News, I'm Lexis Ponce.
A federal judge partially blocks the Trump administration from enacting a policy that bans the use of the X marker used by many non-binary people on passports. U.S. District Judge Julia Kobik sided with the American Civil Liberties Union's motion for a preliminary injunction, which stops the ban while the lawsuit continues. The ruling requires the State Department to allow 6 transgender and non-binary people who are the plaintiffs in the lawsuit to obtain passports with sex designations consistent with their gender identity. Kobik wrote, quote, "The executive order and the passport policy on their face classify as passport applicants on the basis of sex and thus must be reviewed under immediate judicial scrutiny. That standard requires the government to demonstrate that its actions are substantially related to an important governmental interest. The government has failed to meet this standard," end quote. Kobik also said the new passport policy and executive order are based on irrational prejudice towards transgender Americans and are contrary to the nation's constitutional commitment to equal protection for all. Finally, the judge added the Trump policy was not adopted in compliance with the procedures required by the Paperwork Reduction and Administrative Procedure Acts. In an executive order signed in January, the president used a narrow definition of the term sex instead of a broader conception of gender. The order says a person is male or female, and it rejects the idea that someone can transition from the sex assigned at birth to another gender. That framing is at odds with major medical groups. The ACLU said the new policy would effectively mean transgender, non-binary, and intersex Americans could not get an accurate passport. In the lawsuit, the ACLU described how one woman had her passport returned with a male designation, while others feared their applications might be suspended and their passports held by the State Department. The Trump administration argued the passport policy change does not violate the equal protection guarantees of the Constitution and contended that the president has broad discretion in setting passport policy. The Trump administration is trying to cut funding to almost all public media, including NPR and PBS. The plan is to push Congress to cut all federal funding to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which is the nonprofit that funds NPR, PBS, along with hundreds of community radio stations. KBOO Radio receives a community service grant from the CPB that helps fund the local broadcast of nationally syndicated radio programs like Democracy Now! That would take away $1.1 billion from public media. The White House claims that NPR and PBS is a waste of time and money. CPB funding contributes about 13% of local public and community media stations' revenue. The money is distributed in a way that provides for a higher budget to smaller markets. The cuts to public media is part of an overall rescission that would take around $9 billion from multiple programs such as USAID and State Department programs. The Trump administration must follow formal impoundment procedures, which includes sending a memo to Congress. Then, the legislative branch has 45 days if they would like to accept or deny or ignore the request to cut funding. The request is expected on April 28th. It's been almost 5 years since the death of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police and the mass protests in support of police reforms that followed. But in Washington state, groups that work for greater police accountability say progress has been slow. KBOO reporter Dajon has more.
5 years after George Floyd's murder by a white police officer that sparked nationwide protests and demands for police reform, progress remains slow, including in Washington. State legislators passed a number of police reforms a year after Floyd's death, including banning chokeholds and no-knock raids. One law banning police pursuits was later rolled back. Despite the changes, 2024 was one of the deadliest years for police killings in Washington, with almost 50 deaths. Dom Campese with the Washington Coalition for Police Accountability says at least 10 involved police pursuits.
We need people to step up to the plate. We need legislators to work with us. We need law enforcement to work with us. And we can enact sensible alternatives to what's currently happening.
Nationwide, police killed more people in 2024 than any year in more than a decade, and Black people have died at disproportionate rates. Research shows most killings by police begin with traffic stops, mental health checks, and other nonviolent offenses. The coalition has been pushing the state to create an Office of Independent Prosecutions to handle officer-involved shootings, rather than leaving charging decisions with local prosecutors. Campese argues the current system is flawed because when cases are reopened, they go back to the same prosecutor who made the initial decision. He says this creates potential conflicts of interest due to prosecutors' close ties with police.
We would like to see officers held accountable when they break the law and when someone ends up dying at their hand.
The Washington legislature has approved a plan to provide $100 million to hire more police officers. The bill will also allow local governments to increase the sales tax without voter approval to pay for criminal justice expenses. For KBOO News and the Public News Service, I'm Dejan.
Defense Secretary Hegseth faces calls to resign for discussing battle plans in a second Signal chat. Indiana denies students the use of college IDs to register to vote, and the White House signals the U.S. might stop trying to end the Russia-Ukraine war. With more on the story, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
What a big surprise that a few leakers get fired and suddenly a bunch of hit pieces come out from the same media that peddled the Russia hoax won't give back their Pulitzers. They got Pulitzers for a bunch of lies.
Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is downplaying stories about him sharing battle plans in a second Signal chat thread, this one including his wife, brother, and personal lawyer. He put similar details about attacks on the Houthis in Yemen into previous group texts that included Jeffrey Goldberg, editor of The Atlantic. President Donald Trump says he stands by Hegseth, but an official speaking anonymously to NPR said the White House is looking to replace him. Meanwhile, the Trump administration is questioning whether it will continue working to end the Russia-Ukraine war. Ceasefire talks have stalled. Under U.S. pressure, Kiev had agreed to one plan, which was rejected by Moscow. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says America will do what it can to broker peace, but it's not going to continue if peace isn't possible.
If it's not possible, if we're so far apart that this is not going to happen, then I think the president's probably at a point where he's going to say, well, we're done. We'll do what we can on the margins. We'll be ready to help whenever you're ready to have peace, but we're not going to continue with this endeavor for weeks and months on end.
Trump is criticizing legal delays on migrant deportation, saying he's being stymied at every turn. The Supreme Court has paused flights to El Salvador, but the president says holding trials for the detained is impossible. Indiana is the latest state prohibiting college students from using school IDs to register to vote or cast a ballot. Democrats say the new law is meant to suppress turnout among young people who turn to support more liberal candidates. Indiana Secretary of State Diego Morales says the change will help ensure election integrity.
A student ID does not provide those assurances in the way an Indiana driver's license does.
The state has the nation's lowest voter turnout rate. Idaho, Montana, and Ohio have enacted similar rules. Lawmakers in several states are trying to get the abortion drug mifepristone declared an environmental pollutant, arguing trace amounts are contaminating drinking water in spite of testimony that's not happening. Maine has abortion clinics in only three towns, and Olivia Pennington with Maine Family Planning says the bill there has nothing to do with water quality. She says the real aim is to limit access, especially for rural residents.
Medication abortion is extremely safe and effective and a way to ensure that folks in rural areas have equitable access to abortion care.
The Trump administration has halted the EPA's civil rights and environmental justice work. The agency is no longer accepting new complaints that communities with large minority populations are subject to worse pollution. 13 existing cases are awaiting review, including one about poultry waste in North Carolina, but Debbie Chizuer with Earth Justice says what'll happen now is unclear.
In this moment where EPA staffing has been threatened and the structure of the civil rights work has been changed, that will debilitate its efforts to enforce civil rights and to protect communities.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast as KBOO's Earth Day Marathon continues. At 5:30, it's Coast Range Radio. On this episode, Washington's Legacy Forest Defense Campaign and Twin Harbors Waterkeeper. At 6 o'clock, it's the Earth Day Special, Four Walls for Us All, exploring the policies of safe, affordable housing and the passion to go beyond typical solutions to climate change. Then at 7, Destroy the Machines, an array of metal and punk music, all on the theme of environmentalism. Stick around at 8 for 2 hours of nature sounds. Tonight's weather, we have a low of 42 degrees with clear skies. Tomorrow's weather, we have sunny skies with a high of 73 degrees and a low of 44 degrees. Today in history, April 22nd, 1976, Barbara Walters becomes the first female U.S. nightly network news anchor. The quote of the day is from Albert Einstein, who said, quote, "Look deep into nature, and then you will understand everything better." Spring is here in Oregon, and a changing climate means more sneezing and itchy eyes for allergy sufferers. Isabel Charlet spoke with some experts who offer tips on how to cope with allergies and support children.
Oregon's pollen season is starting earlier and lasting longer thanks to climate change, with research showing airborne pollen levels increasing over 20% in the last 30 years. Dr. Shyam Joshi with OHSU says right now Oregon is in tree pollen season, with grass pollen season right around the corner. He explains the grass seed production in the Willamette Valley means Oregon has unusually high levels of grass pollen. About 1 in 5 children suffer from seasonal allergies, and Joshi says it is important to take them seriously.
We often brush off allergies as, oh, it's just allergies, but it can really cause issues with learning. Even in the classroom, we see kids' grades drop off because they're so preoccupied with their itchy nose or itchy eyes.
Joshi adds, if you or your child is allergic to pollen, keep the windows closed while driving or inside and use air purifiers in the house to remove any pollen that's gotten in. He says medications like antihistamine, nasal sprays, tablets, or liquids are helpful. With more than 60 million Americans suffering from seasonal allergies, researchers are always developing new treatments. Immunotherapy, which can change the body's immune response to allergens, includes allergy shots. In recent years, the FDA has approved sublingual tablets that can treat reactions to grass pollen, ragweed, and dust mites. Dr. Gregory Carnevale with United Healthcare says to check with your doctor to keep up with the latest treatments.
One of the values of seeing a healthcare professional is some of these newer medications can oftentimes have less side effects.
Joshi says people are suffering more from allergies now than they did in the past, in part because of increased CO2 in the air. He explains because plants love CO2, higher amounts trigger them to produce more pollen. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
The Native American Rights Fund has a new online resource to help tribes stay informed about their water rights. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Native American law group has launched a free online resource to help tribal nations obtain legal information about their water rights that they might not be able to afford. As the Mountain West News Bureau's Caleb Radel reports, this comes at a time when tribes face increasing water challenges.
The resource is called the Headwaters Report, created by the Native American Rights Fund. The report breaks down the ins and outs of tribal water law, updates what's going on in the courts and Congress, and highlights what water issues are on the horizon. Daniel Cordalis is a staff attorney with a Colorado-based group. He says some tribes will pay third-party firms thousands of dollars a month to provide them with that information.
It's information every tribe should have, and the cost is a barrier to getting this kind of information for a lot of tribal nations, and it shouldn't be one. I think it lifts the whole tribal communities up if they're able to have the same information.
Cordalis says safeguarding tribal waters is increasingly important in the West, where drought is shrinking tribes' water supplies, wildfires are damaging their watersheds, and population booms are straining water resources. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
There's been mixed reactions from Native leaders in Canada to the death of Pope Francis. He was the pontiff that delivered a historic apology to Canada's Indigenous people for the Catholic Church's role in the abuses that took place in Canadian residential schools. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Known as the People's Pope because of his non-traditional papacy, he made history with a long-awaited apology. Francis died of a stroke on Monday, the day after his last public appearance on Easter Sunday. He was 88. and he left behind a legacy that will be long remembered by Canada's native people. He made the historic apology before an Indigenous delegation that traveled to Rome in April of 2022.
I'm in Rome speaking directly to the Holy Father, the most powerful voice in the Catholic Church. I was just about overwhelmed, let me tell you.
Former National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Phil Fontaine, was there as part of the delegation.
Pope Francis' relationship with Indigenous peoples is profound because he is the first pope to ever apologize for the Church's wrongdoing with our peoples. And more importantly, he asked for forgiveness for all of the Church's failures.
Canada's Indigenous leaders had been asking for a papal apology for decades. Members of that delegation described the physical, emotional, and sexual abuse that took place at the residential schools, which were funded by the Canadian government and run by churches. There was also malnourishment, neglect, the loss of culture, and forced assimilation at the schools which operated for more than a century. The Pope also denounced the doctrine of discovery, a church declaration that lands being colonized belonged to no one, justifying that Indigenous lands could be seized. He also said what the Indigenous people in Canada experienced was genocide. Many also praised Pope Francis for coming to Canada 6 months later, despite being in poor health. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A walk for missing and murdered Indigenous people was held Monday in Winter Rock, Arizona, ahead of the opening of the Navajo Nation Council's spring session. The council has a task force which is addressing the issue. The task force led the walk, focusing on missing children and to raise awareness of MMIP on families across the Navajo Nation. Task Force Chair Delegate Amber Crotty says children must be prioritized. Advocates were among those to join lawmakers on the walk to the council's chamber, where speakers then shared personal stories and policy concerns. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
We now go to Global Citizen Commentary from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. In his view, anti-Semitism is the false pretext for Trump's attack on universities. Gertov says Trump is out to demolish centers of independent power. As he observes, Harvard's resistance has set the tone for what hopefully will be a united front of universities in defense of freedom of study and inquiry. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. As many people, including several progressive Jewish organizations, have pointed out, the attack on America's elite universities is being carried out under the false pretext of fighting anti-Semitism. Donald Trump has never cared about Jewish students or faculty. To the contrary, he's the president who dines with neo-Nazis and peddles in Jewish stereotypes. Trump's actual aim is to undermine liberal education in every way: research, teaching, admissions, student life, values, and impose conservative guardianship on our top universities. As M. Gessen wrote on the Times opinion page, the attack, quote, is driven by anti-intellectualism and greed. Trump is building a mafia state in which the Don distributes both money and power. Universities are independent centers of intellectual and, to some extent, political power. He is trying to destroy that independence. As the Times reported on April 14, the attack is taking place from two directions, one headed by Stephen Miller, the deputy chief of staff, who seems to have devoted his life to ridding the country of immigrants, the other a secretive task force that just distinguished itself by sending an unauthorized letter to Harvard with demands for changes in admissions and curricula. The attack began with Trump ordering a reduction of $400 million in federal grants to Columbia University, supposedly because of its anti-Semitic policies. The order was followed up by a demand that Columbia make wholesale changes in its disciplinary and admissions policies, then by putting certain regional studies programs under academic receivership. These demands hold Columbia hostage to the Trump administration, which can reverse or add to the federal grants already rescinded should it not be satisfied with Columbia's response. Columbia, my alma mater, by the way, has surrendered without a fight. The Columbia case is just the tip of the iceberg, a Trump test of how much control over elite universities the administration can exercise. Harvard is a test case, too, because it's Harvard. Trump has threatened to terminate its $256 million in federal contracts. nearly $9 billion in grant commitments, and even its tax-exempt status. The administration has already frozen $2.2 billion in federal grant money. The administration has also demanded the records of all Harvard's international students. Princeton, Johns Hopkins University, and dozens of other top schools have also been threatened with removal of federal funds unless they accept the administration's conditions. Nationwide, over 1,000 international students' visas have been revoked, and now the Chronicle of Higher Education reports that over 4,700 international student records in the Federal Student and Exchange Visitor Information System database have been terminated. This is precisely what authoritarian leaders do. To his credit, Harvard's president, Alan Garber, has chosen to defy Trump's attack, saying on April 14, quote, "No government, regardless of which party is in power, should dictate what private universities can teach, whom they can admit and hire, and which areas of study and inquiry they can pursue," unquote. 800 Harvard professors have joined him in defending academic freedom, led by Professor Steve Levitsky, author of the book How Democracies Die on Trump's Autocracy. "We are currently witnessing the collapse of our democracy," Levitsky says. Universities are starting to unite in protest and resistance. A mutual defense compact has formed, comprised of several Big Ten schools and a number of others. The compact is the academic equivalent of NATO, a group pledged, just as in Article 5 of the NATO Charter, to come to the aid of any of its own that is attacked by Trump. Harvard faculty who receive federal research grants have sued the administration for redress. Hopefully, they too will coordinate with other university faculty in similar circumstances. I think the elite universities can survive Trump's bombardment. They have billion-dollar endowments and access to top-dollar supporters. The real challenge for them is to demonstrate, with student and faculty support, that they can get along just fine without Trump. But they will also need to gain public support. Universities are not valued the way they once were. Defense of free speech and independent research don't galvanize people into action. In many parts of the country, universities and colleges, especially the private ones, are easy targets for the MAGAites and others who see higher education as a luxury, a waste of public funds, and a service to the privileged few. At the same time, the top universities will also have to do better with international students, protecting them from unwarranted intrusions by ICE, and demonstrating to worried parents back home that an American education is safe. There are well over 1 million foreign students in the U.S. right now, representing a contribution of $44 billion and 378,000 jobs to the U.S. economy. Universities, not for the first time in our history, will have to prove themselves, both to domestic and foreign audiences, to be a good investment. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News for Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Lexis Ponce, Josh Salem, Mel Gertov, Kenny, Dejon, and Onyx. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, and Isabel Charlet. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KABU programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kabu.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for Coast Range Radio.
Well, hello. What's this? Would you look at that? It's KABU's special Earth Day Marathon coming up on Tuesday, April 22nd. Looks like it'll feature local environmental advocates, native perspectives, earth-conscious music, radio shows on Espanol, and plenty of nature sounds. A full day's worth, it looks like. KBOO's Earth Day programming kicks off on Monday, April 21st at 10 p.m. and runs through 10 p.m. Tuesday. All the information is online at kboo.fm/earthday. That's kboo.fm/earthday. Leave it better than you found it.